Chapter 37. The ground is shaking now, hard enough that Ray Sloan is sure the observatory is going to collapse into the ground, a consumptive fissure swallowing them all. Sloan isn't sure she can do anything about it, but she has to try. She's here, trapped on this world, and what else can be done but try to save it? Woozy, bloodied and beaten, she follows Rax up the steps, blaster in hand. He looks over his shoulder, a craven fear crossing his face as the mask of confidence falls away. "Get away!" he seethes, batting at the air with a bloody hand. Sloan shoots him in the back of his right leg. Gallius Rax, Galli, bugles in pain and falls against the steps. With a groan, he pushes himself up on both hands. She shoots him in the other shoulder. He slumps, sobbing. Then as he turns over, his hands up in surrender as he pleads,
Don't, please!
She shoots him in the stomach. Every shot feels perfect. Every shot feels like revenge. Sloane's heard stories about revenge. About how it never really finishes everything. About how it never truly completes you. But at this moment, she disbelieves. Because this feels better than anything has ever felt to her. Rax's hands move to his midriff, where a spreading red stains his raiment. Soon his navel white matches the red cape spilled beneath him. Unblinking, he stares at her, mouth gasping. Something wet slides in the back of his throat, like a creeping thing. "You're dying," she tells him. And he is. That much is plain to see. His lips have gone chapped and pale.
"Fellow outcast," he says.
"Yes."
"You serve the contingency now."
"I serve no one," she says.
"Listen! Listen! There's a ship, a short walk from here,"
he wheezes.
"Imperialis! Take it! Hux is there. Others! Use the map in a data spike, in the computer. Set a course for the unexplored."
He coughs. Flecks of red dot his lips, along with bubbles of spit.
"Infinity already sent a ship ahead. A dreadnought. The Emperor's."
It hits her. Of course.
Back on Coruscant, looking through the Imperial archives and taking an accounting of all the ships, one stood out as not being accounted for properly. It was said the New Republic took it down, but no tracking record showed that fate.
"The Eclipse," she says.
He nods.
"Go to it. Leave this place. Find a new domain. Start the game over."
His teeth clench together with a vice grip. Through them, he keeps talking, babbling now.
"Undeserving. I am undeserving. Just a skittermouse, not of a walker. Outcast. Always the outcast. Shates. Corvisora. Undeserved."
His head thuds against the step. A line of blood oozes from his nose as the last flash of light goes dark behind his eyes. Sloan stands. From his hand, she takes something else. The pair of game pieces. Imperator and Outcast.
"Mine," she thinks.
The vibration underneath her wakes her. Nora groans, picking herself up. Her husband is beneath her, eyes shut, as if sleeping. She pretends that's what it is.
"He's just asleep. I'll wake him later, when it's time to go."
She grabs the wall and pulls herself up. moving toward the steps, she sees another body there. It's him. Gallius Rax. His red cape pools beneath him like spilled viscera. For him, she tells a different story.
He's not asleep. He is dead.
Revenge has won the day.
Justice has fled into the shadows.
Nearby, a sound. Fingers on keys. The ground suddenly shifts hard, and she almost loses her footing. Nora continues up the stairs, one agonizing step at a time. Her gaze follows the sound, the tapping sound, and ahead stands a figure. A bit blurry, but when she blinks, the gauzy smear of her vision clarifies. It's Sloane. The blaster pistol is on the floor between them. Nora staggers to it and picks it up.
Sloane,
she says, pointing the blaster. The Imperial, or not, who knows where her loyalties lie anymore, turns toward her, hands by her side. Behind her, the computers project an image of a mechanism. Locks and chain drive banding and telescoping doors. Those are the baffles Brenton was trying to close. But he didn't.
He stopped to save her. No, he stopped to die. Nora Wexley,
Sloane says.
You and me, once again, at the end of things. Yes.
It's all she can say. What else is there? Is any of this even real? Is it all a fever dream? Or is she still lying there on the floor with her husband, asleep, dying or already dead?
Brenton, is he...
He's fine, Nora protests. The words so firm and so fierce, they serve as a kind of sharp-tongued protest. But she knows he's not. Tears streak down her cheeks, and she has to lift her chin to try to deny them.
He's gone,
she says finally, admitting the truth out loud.
I'm sorry. He was a better traveling companion than I deserved. Yes, that's true.
Nora swallows hard.
What are we going to do here? I don't know yet. I need to finish what Brenton started and stop this planet from destroying itself. Something has happened in the core, but I can end it. Best I can tell, there are mechanisms that can close the borehole, that can seal off the reaction from heating the mantle and cracking this planet like a geode. Oh, you should let me do that, just in case you should go. I don't know where. Find your son. Go home. Have a life. Easier said than done. Easier for you than it will be for me. I have none of those things. I never had a husband or a wife to die in my hands. I never had a child. I had only the Empire. And now...
Nora doesn't need her to say any more.
I'm sad for you, Nora says.
And she's surprised that she means it.
I am too.
Are you going to kill me?
Brenton said you weren't as bad as I thought you were.
Sloane shrugs.
Damned with faint praise yet again, it seems.
Aren't we all? Damned, I mean.
Maybe. Maybe not.
You go ahead. Save the world. I'm going to leave now,
Nora says, sighing and wiping tears away. The blaster clatters from her hand.
Let's hope Brenton is right. And you aren't as bad as I think.
Sloane gives her a small nod.
Good luck, Nora Wexley.
You too, Grand Admiral Sloane.
Nora turns and goes back down the steps to claim her husband. Outside, the air is red, choked with dust. Nora tucks her chin and mouth under the collar of her shirt, affording her some small reprieve.
Brenton is heavy, but a burden she feels necessary to bear. She intends to take him back to Akiva.
Back to where she can bury a body in the salt marshes, as is the way of her people. Back to the world where he's not just a memory, where he can be a face that her son can touch, a body over which Temin can grieve. But where? Where will she go? Again, the ground shudders. She staggers, dropping to one knee, then struggling to stand anew. The shuttle. It's safe there, at least from the storm. She takes him inside the darkened Imperial ship. She summons as much saliva to her mouth as she can muster, which is very little, and she cleans his cheeks. Then she tries to start the ship. No go. It's dead. The engines have failed, and the fuel cells have died trying to give life to this ruined machine. She is stranded. She sits in the pilot's seat. She eases Brenton into the seat next to her. Nora holds his cold, stiff hand. For a time, she sleeps. The sound of a ship's engine wakes her. She looks out the cockpit viewport and sees through the dust storm a gleaming, shining vessel rise up through the crimson clouds. The yacht moves swiftly and is gone. A hallucination, she thinks. Some dread phantasm to tease her.
Look at the pretty, shiny ship. Don't you wish you could be on it?
Sleep takes her again. Sleep like death, dark and dreamless. The same sound, a replay of the last, draws her once more out of the deep. Ship engines humming. She peers out and sees nothing. But the scuff of a heel behind her has her lurch to her feet.
Sloane! Nora!
It's not Sloane. It's Jazz. Jazz flanked by a tall Cayuso alien in a broad domed hat.
Jazz Amari, her savior.
Jazz Amari, her ride home.